Okay.
And we'll hope I stay connected. Well, here we go again. Welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic of huge interest to boomer women and their families, our money and how to make the most of it. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Pamela Sams, CRPC, a chartered retirement counseling, a chartered retirement planning counselor and NABBW's retirement planning expert, to start our discussion titled Six Things Women Need to Know About Social Security. But first, before we launch into our discussion, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Ann Holmes, your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. You can find us in a number of places online, including our website, found at www.nabbw.com. Our forum is found at boomerwomenspeak.com. And our Facebook page, the newest site, which is getting a lot of attention lately, is found at facebook.com/NABBW. If you can't recall those names when you go to search, don't worry about it. Just remember the keywords baby boomer women. If you search on those, our sites will come up at the top of the page. Our NABBW teleseminars are one of the many benefits we provide our members. This live call is free and available to the public, but we also have a collection of over 100 past teleseminar recordings available online, and access to them is free to our gold-level membership. Now as to the format of tonight's call, get comfortable and make sure you have paper and pen, because based on the popularity of the calls we've recently done on IRA planning mistakes, I know you're going to want to take notes. For the next 45 minutes, I'll have the phone lines muted, and Pam and I will be discussing tonight's topic. Then I'll open the lines for questions from our listening audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type it in. I'll be able to see that and pass it on to Pam when the time is right. Okay, moving forward. I think we've covered all the housekeeping. So let me say that our guest speaker tonight, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, is a frequent guest and always covers important information related to money and financial planning, something too many of us boomer women just don't know enough about. Pam is NABBW's Retirement Planning Associate and an expert in personal finance. She's spent the past dozen years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. President of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor, Pam's focus is on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. A graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia, Pam holds an MBA in financial management from Averett University. She's earned several client service and financial planning awards and successfully earned her CRPC, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor certification, through the College of Financial Planning. Pam and I are very aware of two things. Number one, Americans are living longer, and number two, they do not have anywhere near enough saved for retirement, which is why she and I decided to hold one teleseminar each month on retirement planning topics. We're delighted that those of you who are listening have joined us for this call, and now I ask you to help me welcome NABBW's own retirement planning expert, Pamela J. Sams.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Ann, and I'm glad to be here once again with everyone to discuss another important topic to women, and we'll be talking about Social Security planning today. Very, very important topic, and actually, statistically, a lot of women really rely heavily on Social Security, and we're going to go through a lot of the questions that we'll go through today. We're really focus in on some of the key issues that women need to know about, particularly surrounding Social Security. Social Security was never meant to be a sole retirement income resource, but only used as a supplement in fact, one of three sources of retirement income, the other two being pension and personal savings. But like I said, a lot of women rely heavily on the Social Security piece, and we'll go through a lot of that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. I know when I was 15, I got my first paying job other than babysitting. I worked for a little boutique. I lived in a college town, and so it was a little boutique near the campus, and I was so excited because I was making $1.25 an hour, and I calculated that up because I could count out how many hours I worked and then, you know, how many times $1.25, and when I got that first paycheck, I was really upset because it didn't add up. And I'm sure that most people have had a similar experience when you're going, what is that? What is that? And then why do they think that they can take that money away from me? And as a 15-year-old, it certainly seemed like Social Security money. You know, because I then thought, well, this is my little fund that I'm going to be saving up until I retire. And I'm thinking, well, that is, what, 50 years from now or something like that? And then I got even more upset when I found out I had to give that money to other people that qualified now. It wasn't even my own little pot. So to me, I think that there are a lot of people who have been confused by how Social Security works, and it's certainly been in the news a lot lately. So I think that we've got a really hot topic here tonight, and I can't wait to hear what you have to tell us about it, Pam. So maybe the best place to start would be to begin with a discussion of qualifications for benefits.
Exactly, and you're exactly right in terms of that. My daughter said the same thing when she had her her job right out of high school, and she looked at her paycheck and figuring that she would have something way more than she did, and she's like, what's this
right.
FAICA, you know, what's
right.
this FICA thing? Who's FICA?
Right, and so, why did they take my money?
And why did they take my money?
Right.
And that's one of the things that a lot of people are unaware of, or at least younger people, when they see their first paycheck with that. But in terms of Social Security, you qualify for Social Security benefits, like what we said, by earning Social Security credits when you work at a job, and then you pay those Social Security taxes. The credits are based on the amount of your earnings. So basically you use your work history to determine the eligibility for retirement and or your disability benefits or either your family eligibility for survivor benefits when you die based on the amount of earnings and credits that you have. Now, for Social Security, you must earn a total of 40 credits to qualify. And in 2012, so last year, for each, you receive one credit for each $1,130 of earnings, so up to a maximum of 4 credits per year. So that's in terms of how you qualify towards those 40 credits. So for each year, the amount of earnings needed for credit goes up slightly based on your average earnings level as they increase. So basically, as you get older and you start making more money, those credits go up a little bit. So the credits that you earn remain on your Social Security record even when you change jobs or you have no earnings for a while. So, for example, if anyone was born, let's say, in 1929 or later, they need about 10 years of work to be eligible for retirement benefits. And people born in 1929 or later, 10 years, and people born before 1929 would probably need fewer years of work. But look at that number as about 10 years of work. So benefits are calculated based on earnings over a 40-year period. So each year that you don't work, and like I said, for most women are out of the workplace quite a bit, taking care of kids and taking care of aging parents. For each year that you're not working, zero is earned in that category. So when you're calculating your benefits, Social Security drops the lowest 5 years of earnings. So the retirement benefits are ultimately based on an income average of about 35 years when you look at your calculating your 40 credits. And like I said before, statistically, women may or may not qualify for their own retirement benefits because we're out of the workplace for quite some time. On average, 15% of women, like I said, spend most of their time out of the workforce taking care of children and aging parents. So for many of us who have not worked enough years to earn our 40 credits, you know, it's going to be a little bit different. for us. So women average about 13 years, statistically, 13 years of zero earnings. So you may be out of the workplace for quite some time on that. So really just when you're calculating based on 40 credits to qualify, 1130 for each, one credit for each 1130 that you earn, and then you have a maximum of 4 credits per year. So that's how you calculate your Social Security benefits.
Okay. That makes it sound fairly clear. And
yeah, that was clear as mud. But if you go to the Social Security website, they're really good with a lot of different information. But, you know, just to kind of glean out of that information, basically 40 credits to qualify, and then looking at probably an average of 35 years of income, average over your 35-year working period is what they're looking at to calculate your benefit. And then, of course, longevity goes in there to that calculation as well.
Okay. So it's not – somehow I'd always been thinking there was, you know, where they took your top 7 years or something like that and averaged them. It's, apparently that was a mistake that I – in my understanding.
Well, what they do is calculate, like I said, they drop the lowest 5 years of earnings. Mm-hmm. And so they're averaging about 35 good years of your good earning years. So basically they're looking back and they're dropping out those 5 low years. So, you know, the high school job you had, things like that, they're not going to calculate those years that equal 5 of them. So they're basically dropping some of those off.
All right.
And then taking an average.
Okay. Well, it seems like one of the biggest things that comes under discussion as people get closer and closer to retirement age is the discussion about when to collect your Social Security benefits, because it's not a just flat-out A or B type of an answer, is it?
Mm-hmm. No, it is not. And, you know, to be honest, that's kind of probably the number one question that I get myself when people start thinking about retirement and retirement income planning is, when do I take Social Security benefits?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Social Security Administration has determined basically an age that you're going to be eligible to receive your what we call full benefit, your regular benefit, which is called, you'll probably hear Social Security call it your full retirement age, or FRA, your full retirement age.
Okay.
So for today retirees, full retirement age probably ranges between age 65 and age 66. Most boomers would fall into that age 66 categories.
Mm-hmm.
So for people born before 1938, when you're looking at age 65, and then full retirement age gradually increases in increments from there. So, for example, if you're born between 1943 and 1954, your FRA, or full retirement age, is 66. But if you were born between 1955 and 1959, it increases by 2-month increments. So, for instance, in 1955, it would be 66 in 2 months, mm-hmm. and then 66 in 4 months, and basically going on the line. Anybody born over later than 1960, the full retirement age is 67. And, of course, that's always been a big contention for a discussion on, are we going to raise the full retirement age from 67 to 70 or whatever. But, you know, that's something Congress will probably come out with or take a look at it as they evaluate the solvency of Social Security. But as it stands now, anywhere between 65 and 67. So when you're claiming benefits, it does have, you know, an ultimate effect on your retirement income. So making the decision to retire and when to start collecting it really makes a difference. So claiming early, you can claim as early as 62, but what you're doing is that you're receiving a reduced benefit if you claim at 62. So regardless of when you actually retire from employment, you begin your Social Security as early as 62. This provides payment for a longer period of time, but it's going to permanently reduce your monthly income for each month prior to your full retirement age to that account for
okay.
a longer distribution. So you're going to see a check longer, but once you make that decision, it's going to you're locking in that reduced monthly income.
Right. So that's something that I've realized talking to other people that they get confused about that. Somehow they don't understand that it's a permanent reduction. They think, oh, well, then when I get to be 65, then it'll go up. But it doesn't.
But it doesn't. So what you're doing is basically saying, you know, I'm going to take it early in anticipation of getting longer distributions, but just know it's going to be less. Generally, anywhere between 20 to 25% less of monthly income if you take it as early as 62 when you're first eligible. Now, if you claim on time or for your regular benefits, basically you reach your full retirement age, 65 to 67. You know, you have to look at the chart, but anywhere between there. Once you've reached your full retirement age, you receive your regular monthly Social Security benefit, which is based on that work history and average lifetime earnings that we just talked about. So basically, you have your full regular benefit at that point, and you're good to go. Now, something that people may not be aware of is that if you claim late, you have increased benefits. So if you can wait till age 70, your benefit actually goes up. So for each year that you work another year of your earnings and you don't take Social Security at your full retirement age, your benefit is increased by 8% up to age 70. So a lot of people aren't aware of, you can get actually a really good bump in your Social Security benefits if you can wait to start taking the benefits at age 70. So a lot of times, if you can take a look at what your numbers would be at age 62, your full retirement age, and age 70, and depending on what you come up with and what you need for your retirement income, it may be a better strategy to increase your monthly Social Security benefits by delaying it, the start of it, in order to maximize your benefit there.
Okay. But you can't reduce, you can't delay beyond 70. Am I correct about that?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we do have a range of ages, and it has an impact on what the payment will be for us, and that whatever payment is set at, it stays that way, unless there's a government percentage increase. So that doesn't work for it. Social Security doesn't.
Yeah, well, there is a cost of living adjustment built into Social Security. Last year it was 1.7%. Yeah, in previous years it has been as high as 3.5. So really just kind of depends on what they come up with in terms of the cost of living adjustment based on your on what's going on with the economy. They'll put it in there, and then you make it a little bit of an increase based on the COLA for your retirement. Your Social Security benefit. From there, but you know they're not sending those statements out anymore. They're conserving the printing costs and saving more money. So in order to get a copy of your Social Security benefit statement, you can go to ssa.gov, ssa.gov. You can sign up like you would do on your bank to receive electronic statements. So once you set up your account, you can access your Social Security statements, just like you would when they mailed them to you generally somewhere around your birthday. You would receive those Social Security statements. So you know, on there, it will have what we just discussed, what your benefit will be at age 62, what your benefit will be at with full retirement age, and what it will be at 70. And so you can basically take a look at those numbers each year. You get each time you go in and take a look at that statement and see what that number would be for you.
All right. All right, so is there anything more that we should be discussing about claiming benefits and their effect, that decision's effect on our retirement income?
Claiming Social Security early, you know, really kind of determines the amount of income that you need, like I said. Now, statistically, women tend to claim Social Security benefits early. You know, what we tend to do is that sometimes we are generally younger than our husbands and we want to retire at the same time as our husbands. So we end up taking a little bit less based on that calculation. So whenever he retires, he claims his benefits, we usually claim our benefits, but they may be a little bit reduced because we are a little bit younger. That's just a trend or a tendency that I see statistically with most women. We tend to say, to claim a little bit early, but you know, as we talk about in the discussions a little bit later, we'll talk about some strategies that we may be able to use to to maximize benefits a little bit later in the call.
All right. Well, then right now let's talk about, so you just briefly mentioned working and that it has an impact on the Social Security benefits. So let's talk about that. What are the effects of a decision that we might make to continue working, and how does that impact on our benefits?
And the benefits, exactly. So a little bit about, you know, working in retirement. According to one study that I've read, 79% of baby boomers expect to work in retirement. But actually, the reality is very different. You know, what they found out when they conducted the same study is that 40% of retirees actually leave the workforce. And that's basically due to illness, disability, some layoffs. Despite good intentions of continuing to work, a lot of retirees just lack the energy to continue working as well. So it, when you're doing your Social Security or your overall retirement income planning, really take a look at how long that you will be earning wages if that's based on if I'm going to continue to work to, you know, let's say age 70 or, you know, somewhere in that range. Realistically, you know, how much work can you anticipate from that? But based on the income and how Social Security is affected on that, benefits are deducted. So what they do is they, for each dollar is deducted for every $2 earned. Okay, so basically they deduct the benefit by a dollar for each $2 earned. If you are making more than $14,680, which was last year's number, and you are below your full retirement age. So if you haven't reached your full retirement age yet, you're still working, you get a, and you you claim your benefits, then they're going to deduct a dollar for each $2 earned. Now, as you reach your full retirement age, it's every dollar. It's a dollar for every $3 deducted. Support amount made anywhere above $38,880 during the year you reach your full retirement age. And then after you reach your retirement age, there's no limit. They don't have any reduction in the benefits from there. So basically you're looking at, you know, below full retirement age, $1 for every $2 earned. And then at full retirement age, it's a dollar for every $3 earned over a certain amount of money. So if you're looking at working in retirement and collecting Social Security at the same time, you have to really look at the numbers, because if you look at it, sometimes that means based on those deductions or reductions in the benefit, you can actually be working for free. It's just offsetting each other. So it wouldn't make sense. So you really have to kind of look at what the benefit will be reduced at if you continue to work, because you don't want it to offset each other and you're just going to work and you're still not getting much. You're not getting any additional gain from it. So really, you know, working and receiving income in terms of your Social Security benefit, really just take a look at, does it make sense for you to continue to do so if you're in the below retirement age and you're full retirement age. Anything over that, don't worry about it. But based on that, just make sure you know what your calculations are.
Okay. Are there any ways that you can squirrel away that money some other place so it doesn't look like income and therefore it can be counted, or is that just my good imagination working?
Yeah, I think that's a good imagination working. Also, you know, in addition to that, Social Security may be a taxable income. I mean, to add, you know, I guess conflict to injury, insult to injury, it could be taxable as well. So depending on your total income, annual income in retirement, a portion of it can be taxable income. So what, depending on if you file jointly, if you're a spouse or you're filing jointly, you may be subject to that income tax. So determine if your benefit is taxable. You need to look at, and this is a long calculation, but I'm going to read it. It's basically your modified adjusted gross income plus one half of your Social Security benefits plus any other tax-exempt interest you receive, and they come up with a combined income total. and based on the numbers, if it exceeds a certain amount, some of the benefits could be taxable. So for last year, 2012, when we filed our taxes, if you were married filing jointly, anything between $32,000 and $44,000, 50% of your benefit could be taxable. And then if you had anything above $44,000 or more, 85% of your benefits taxable. So just know that some of your Social Security is going to be taxable income. In addition to if you're in the before your full retirement age and your full retirement age, a reduction in the benefits as well. Mm-hmm. So when you're working and receiving benefits, you know, just make sure you take a look at what the numbers are and make sure it makes sense for you and your overall retirement strategy.
Okay. And along with that, I think that there's some other things that we need to discuss related to our retirement income and spousal benefits. So what's the story there?
Mm-hmm. Well, spousal benefits for retirement income. Generally, women are eligible for three types of benefits. We can have our own retired worker benefits, so based on our own work record, we can have that. We could get spouse benefits based on our spouse or former spouse's benefits, and I'll talk a little bit about that because you can also do it if you're divorced, but you have to have certain criteria that you need to meet. And you can also receive benefits based on survivor benefits. So with spousal retirement benefits, what you're doing is basically taking the benefit based on your spouse's benefits. So if you don't have the eligible terms or the quarters or credits that we talked about earlier, you can actually take a benefit based on your spouse's employment record, which is equal to 50% of what your spouse's benefit would be. And so in order to do so, the spouse has to be at their full retirement age, which is generally, like I said, for most boomers, 66, and the spouse needs to be claiming benefits. So if the spouse is claiming benefits at full retirement age, you don't want to take your record because you may not have enough quarters. You can take 50% of your spouse's benefit for your spousal retirement benefit. Eligibility for that, you may earn less than 50% of the amount of your spousal benefit. You have no benefits on your own terms, and it applies to both married and divorced women. Mm-hmm. So the way that the divorced spouse benefits work is that, and a lot of people miss this because, you know, it may be a lag period between when you actually got divorced and when you claim, you know, Social Security benefits. That may be all out of your head from there. But if you are divorced, you're also eligible for spousal benefits from your ex-spouse. Now, you do have to meet these criteria. So if your marriage lasted at least 10 years, you are not remarried, and you're at least age 62. So a divorce, if you meet those criteria, you can actually also receive your the benefits from your spouse's record if you don't have your own record. Now, this has no effect on your former spouse's benefit or his or her current spouse if they're remarried. This is something outside of that calculation. What you need to do is just contact the Social Security Administration and say, you know, I meet these criteria. They'll take a look at what the record is on the ex-spouse, and then they'll calculate your retirement benefit. But generally, it's the same, the 50% of the spousal benefit in order to do that. So a lot of divorced women miss this particular benefit because, like I said, it's such a longer lag time sometimes between when you actually got divorced and then Social Security kicks in. So you may not know that you're eligible if you meet these criteria. So always be aware that may be something that you can take advantage of, and just write it down, take a note, do something. And when you're working with your advisor or you're doing planning on your own, that you may be eligible for spousal benefits based on Social Security. Now, the other way to receive benefits would be survivor benefits. So if your spouse dies and has worked long enough to receive a retirement benefit, you and younger children may be eligible to receive survivor benefits. So if your children are under 16, you can collect survivor benefit at your full retirement age, which will be equal to your spouse's full retirement benefit. You can receive a survivor benefit, but a reduced benefit beginning at age 60 if you're basically dealing with survivor benefits, and a benefit beginning at age 50 if you become disabled. Mm-hmm. So you're able to look at taking a survivor benefit from there. Now, as I discussed previously, many women do not qualify for retirement benefits through their own work history for lack of us being in the workplace for a longer period of time. We may not have the 40 quarters. So basically, you're looking at, you know, the spousal benefit, you know, from there. So you're entitled to the spouse benefits and benefits under the work history of your spouse, but you can't receive both. So if you look at, if you're eligible and you take a look at if yours is lower, you may want to take a look at his record, and if that's better, then you can take a look at that one. Also, you want to anticipate a reduction in income upon the death of a spouse. So prior to spouse's death, household income could have been your spouse's full retirement benefit plus the spousal benefit that you received, but at death of a spouse, you will begin to receive your spouse's full benefit, but the spousal benefit will go away. That's the thing about Social Security benefits, is that it's either or. They're not going to give you both. So you have to make a decision when you do that. So, you know, anticipate at death of a spouse that there may be some reduction in income based on you taking a different one, and you won't receive both of them at the same time. You'll just be receiving the spousal benefit from there.
Okay. All right. Well, I can see that it gets more and more complicated. I find my brain full of all kinds of little scenarios here, but what if this, but what if that? Anyway.
Exactly. That's the thing about, you know, Social Security planning, and it is actually just like when you're doing your overall retirement plan, Social Security piece, the Social Security planning is a huge piece of that, because there's so many different scenarios that you can go through. Do I do this? Do I do that? When do I file? Should I do something different? And there's a lot of different things that you can do with it, and that's why it's such, like you said before, a hot topic, because people know about it, but we really don't know about it. It's not as simple as what, you know, okay, I reach my full retirement age, I go to Social Security Administration office, and I apply for benefits, and I receive a check. A lot of planning should go into when should I take Social Security, how do I maximize things, and those sort of things.
Okay. Now I'm not going to try to go into too many what ifs, but I've got one that's occurring to me, and that would be a situation where you said that, you know, when we decide to take Social Security, we pick the time when we're going to take it, and then the amount that we are paid is based on that on going forward.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But what if at 62 you decided to start claiming? And then what if at 63 or somewhere after that decision on your part, what if you marry at that time? At that point, can you change to having spousal benefits based on your now having a spouse, or are you still locked into that decision that you made before you married again?
So you were single and then you married again?
Right. Okay. After I elected.
After you made the election.
Mm-hmm.
You generally are able to take a look at making, you know, life changes once you marry. So it's kind of a life event change to do that. So Social Security Administration may allow you to take a look at that calculation a little bit differently if you're only 1 year in. You know, if you're down the road some, then probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're 62 and then you got remarried at 63, and you've only received a year of benefits, you know, there's a way to do that and take a look at it. And that's actually, you know, some things that we can talk about in terms of strategies.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get into talking about strategies, let's talk a little bit more about how can married couples maximize their Social Security benefits. You've said a little bit about how married couples there's two streams there. So how do you maximize that?
Well, maximizing Social Security benefits, there's actually a couple of different strategies, speaking of strategy, in order to do so. And one of the techniques that people aren't aware of is called the file and suspend technique. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about when you asked me that question before. So, for example, let's say, you know, you have a spouse, Joe. He has a higher earning than you, and you have a lower earning. So when your husband, or let's say Joe, reaches full retirement age, he can file for Social Security benefits and then immediately suspend them. So basically file and suspend. This can be done in the remarks section of your benefits application. There's actually a part on the application that you can do that. So because your husband Joe filed for benefits, you can actually choose the higher of your spousal benefits versus your regular benefit. So at that point, you have your benefit, which may be lower because you were lower, you receive a lower earning, but your spouse had a higher earning. You can look at choosing the higher spousal benefit at that point. And then Joe, your husband, can continue to work or draw on income from IRA and then begin receiving his benefit a little bit later on down the road. So that will allow him not only to earn more by continuing to work and do that sort of thing, but also draw a larger benefit. Because we said each time that you wait till age 70, past your full retirement age, your benefit increases by 8%. Mm-hmm. So with the file and suspend technique, basically in order to do that, your husband will go ahead and at his full retirement age, go ahead and do the filing, but immediately suspend it in order for you to take the higher spousal benefit and then go back and take his larger benefit later. Mm-hmm. So that's how to maximize that particular strategy, would be a file and suspend technique. And a lot of people aren't aware that you can actually do file and then suspend it for a period of time in order to get that. Now, the advantages for that particular strategy is that, you know, like I said, number one, the higher earner spouse can delay benefits and then receive that higher benefit a little bit later. And then the lower earning spouse can receive that spousal benefit before the higher earning spouse begins taking any claims. So once he filed and was able to open up his spousal benefit portion to you, then that gives you access to that part. And then, you know, you're able to receive a larger survivor benefit in the future because he waited. And now you have that larger benefit if he passes on before you. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of different advantages with that particular strategy. It's called the file and suspend technique in order to maximize your Social Security benefits. Now, another strategy or technique, and it's not really just for married couples, is actually, let's say, the divorced woman technique is what I call it, is that, you know, we talked about able to take the spouse's benefit if you're divorced and you meet those criteria. So, for example, with a divorced woman, you can take a look at your, in the example, let's say Mary. Her benefit may be $1,800 at her full retirement age, but let's say the ex-spouse's benefit was $2,200. So here is how you're going to maximize the benefit for her. At her full retirement age, at age 66, she's going to take the ex-spouse's benefit, which would be $1,100 of that $2,200. And then at age 70, she's able to switch to her own earnings because she can make that decision at that point. That gave her the benefit or the opportunity to have that benefit grow at 8% per year from her full retirement age at 66 to age 70. So instead of the regular $1,800 she had at her full retirement age, the new benefit with that increase at age 70 is actually $2,376. Mm-hmm. So with that, you're looking at basically doing a kind of a temporary file with the ex-spouse's benefit and then switching later to that larger benefit for yourself in order to let yours grow. So that's a different technique that that divorced women can use if you meet those particular criteria in order to maximize your benefit. And there's, you know, a lot of different strategies, and, you know, this is probably, you know, we can go on and on about that, but those are two kind of major ones that a lot of people aren't aware of, the file and suspend and then the divorced woman technique, looking at delaying, taking a spousal benefit and then delaying hers to take a higher benefit later on to maximize the Social Security benefits.
Okay. Well, this is just really great information, and I'm sure that most of us who are listening had no knowledge of. I certainly never heard of those two techniques that you just discussed, so that's really wonderful information that you've provided. I see that we're about, 18 minutes left in the hour, so one thing would be perhaps a good time now to open up the call to our listeners and find out if they have any questions. So I have unmuted the lines, so anybody who's listening, feel free to just ask a question, just speak out, and while I'll check and see if we've got any that have come into the Q&A box. So,
okay.
Who's here who has got a question? Well, all right. Since nobody is speaking up just yet, I've got four questions that have come in on the there's actually more than four questions, but four that I see that are from the same woman named Kathy in Raleigh. So, in Raleigh, let's see, which one shall I start with here? Her oldest one. We'll start with the oldest one. What happens if a woman is receiving Social Security disability benefits as she approaches her regular retirement age? How does this change?
Basically, it's a matter of taking a look at which benefit would be higher based on, you know, if you're already, you know, kind of like when we talked about the divorced woman technique, if you're receiving certain benefits at one particular point in time, you reach your full retirement age, and then what that benefit would be. Like I said, you can't take both, but you can see if your full retirement age and what your work history and your quarters would be, if that particular benefit would be higher, then you have that option to make that switch at that time.
All right. Her second question, Kathy says, do many women have real pensions upon retirement?
It's a low percentage, but some still have, what we call old-fashioned pensions that are out there. There are a few. A lot of them are generally government workers or, federal government workers, state workers, teachers, things like that. I would probably say teachers are a large population of women, so they probably have, pensions there. But there are probably not a lot, just not even women. Just statistically, there's not a lot of pensions that are available these days. A lot of the companies have moved from what they call defined benefit plans, which were the pensions, to a defined contribution plan, which are 401ks, 403bs, and things like that. So a lot of them are getting out of that pension game. So I would probably, venture to say few women have pensions that are available unless you're in some of those areas that I talked about before.
Okay. Let's see. We'll go on to her third question. She says, what do you mean by the risk of spousal benefits to retirement income?
What we had talked about was the spousal benefit that you were able to take, and then making sure that you were able to, once the reduction is taken out of the equation, when we had talked about the survivor part of it, so instead of taking both yours and your having the spousal benefit and then your spouse's benefit if he passes away, just like I said, the risk of it is basically taking a look at what that income reduction would do to your particular family structure and what you're accustomed to. So those are, like I said, what I mentioned with the risk is really looking at taking certain spousal benefits and then looking at the reduction in income first after your spouse has passed away.
Okay. And Kathy, if you're listening and you've got further questions on these, feel free to speak up. Her last question is, and then we'll go on to others, but her last question, on average, how much does wage inequality penalize women throughout their working lives?
wage inequality, I mean, I'd probably say it has a huge impact on what your Social Security benefits are going to be, because it is based on what your earnings are over the years. So, you know, I guess what we mentioned before, for each credit, for each $1,130 that you earn. So, you know, a lot of women are earning less than what men would earn. Mm-hmm. So there would definitely be some disparity there with what your Social Security benefits would be based on your average earning years.
Okay. I've got more questions here, but I don't want to penalize the people who are listening. So if you're listening and you've got a question, I'll take a break here from asking my questions and say who's got a question, who's listening, who's got a question they'd like to ask Pam. All right. Well, I'll go to one of my other ones that have been typed in. I guess the Carolinas are well represented here today, because those Kathy was from Raleigh, which I believe is in North Carolina, and now we've got a question from Marianne from Murrells Inlet in South Carolina. She says, if you begin to collect Social Security benefits at age 62, what is the income limit that you can earn without a penalty? At what age is there no penalty for income?
That was the numbers that we talked about. You meant the reduction on if you're earning with work?
I think that's what she meant. She's talking about the income limit that you can earn without a penalty. So
So if you're making more, if you're at age 62 and, you know, basically you're below your full retirement age, if you're making more than $14,680, then you're still penalized. So you can make up to $14,680 before you're penalized.
But that seems like such a paltry amount, Pam.
I know. It is.
But you couldn't live on that.
I know. That's why you have to, you know, does it make sense to continue to work, or do I just receive my Social Security benefit? That's how that's what I explained. You do have to, because if you look at working and then you get in the reduction in Social Security, you could be actually working for free, and does it really make sense to work for free? So you really have to, it's a lot involved in it. So the number is definitely small, but that's what you're looking at. So you can make up to $14,680.
Mm-hmm.
If you're at your full retirement age, you can anything above $38,880. So you can make a little bit more at your full retirement age. Not much more, but it gives you a little bit more that you can make. And then after your full retirement age, there's no reduction in your benefit, you know, from there. So those are the numbers. At 62, you're probably looking at making up to $14,680. And then up to $38,880 if you're at your full retirement age.
All right. I've got one more question that have been sent in here. This one is from Nina, and she's in Pensacola. And she says, last August I turned 66. Social Security switched me from Social Security disability to Social Security retirement. Mm-hmm. The money is the same, $694 per month. I'm wondering if they figured in all the jobs I've worked from the age of 16. Many were low-paying, but at one point I worked for a state government for 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a matter of taking a look at what your Social Security statement. That's what I always really stress to people, is that make sure you take a look at them. I know a lot of times when the statement comes in, or if you go online to access them, you just say, oh, okay, I look at, you know, the kind of the numbers, and you toss it. You really do also have to kind of dig in there a little bit. You know, you may or you may not know, but if you take a look at it and see where, you know, on the other, like I think page 3, it'll kind of give you an average of kind of your working years and what you've been doing. If anything looks out of sorts, you do want to contact the Social Security Administration, because they may not be counting some things that should be credited to your account. So if you think that number, you know, if you've been working since 16 and, you know, you retired at some point you receive Social Security disability, but if you think there's some things that may not have been counting, you may want to go back to Social Security Administration and say, can we take a look at my work history? How did you come up with this particular number? And then really just kind of dig in there a little bit deeper if you think that number should be a little bit higher on your work history than what your disability benefits would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? I've got one, but it's a long one, so I'm holding off until everybody else has a chance to ask their questions. So please give us a question. We want to hear your questions. All right, Pam. Well, here's my long question.
Okay.
As I've been saying since we first started talking about discussing Social Security, you know, one of the things that's really great about the fact that we're discussing this topic is that it is such a timely topic because there's been so many discussions. We hear politicians talking about various different policy changes that might be put into place. Because there's all this concern that there might not be a big enough pot of Social Security money put aside for our children, for example, to have any money to be paid out to them. And to a large degree, I think people blame baby boomers for the fact of our vast numbers of as the cause for this. I don't think that's fair to blame us, but I guess that's what I hear a lot of the discussions are. It's all the baby boomers' fault because there's so many of us. So there's many ways that we've been hearing about the potential of how Social Security might change. I mean, one thing would be to raise the retirement age from 68 to 70. Another idea is having a test for income, you know, so that if you're a wealthy person, you don't get Social Security. That it maybe like more of a safety net for people who don't have their own significant enough income to live on. But as you said at the beginning, Social Security was never meant to be something that we totally relied on. So another concept would be increase the Social Security tax that all workers and employees and all employers, I meant to say workers and employers, are all paying Social Security tax, raise the cap on earnings. I guess there's a few other ways, too, but I'm just curious, how do you see it as a financial professional, not a politician? How do you see would be the best way that you think would be to fix Social Security going on into the future?
Just based on, you know, just kind of my opinion, you know, like you said, I've heard a lot of different ways to fix the system. But probably, you know, if we're looking at retirement and we're looking at people living longer, I think probably the best way to do it, in my opinion, would probably be to increase the age that you're eligible for benefits. But only because, like I said, you know, kind of the 60 is the new 50, you know, I mean, we're just living longer. Mm-hmm. So in order to kind of absorb some of that, if you take benefits a little bit later or delay benefits, that would probably be a better way to fix it as well. You know, in my opinion, I've also been an advocate of taking a look at the needs base. I mean, I know it's not a fair type of scenario, but if we look at qualifying for certain benefits, you know, I think some of the more wealthier people in the country probably wouldn't need $1,000 a month benefit for Social Security. How much is that really going to impact? So really looking at, you know, a more of a needs-based tax for Social Security would probably, you know, be a better way to look at it as well. And we all pay into, you know, social type services that we don't receive benefits for. I think Social Security would probably be one of those. I mean, it started out as a program for what we call kind of worker insurance for those people who hadn't saved enough or didn't get a pension, was able to supplement their income. So that was the way the system was originally started, was based on kind of an insurance for people who may not have been getting more money from a pension or something like that. So we can take care of the older workers who have put in the time. We give them a little some checks there. So, you know, the system is really hasn't been revised probably since, you know, I would probably say the 60s or the 70s with taking a look at the age benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always just been a kind of a thorn in the side of a lot of politicians and, you know, a lot of professionals to take a look at how do we really fix it as well. But I think probably the more simple fix would be to increase the age based on the longevity of the population and how long we're living and how much retirement income we're going to need. You know, everything is kind of indexed based on longevity numbers. I think the Social Security will probably lean towards going in that direction.
Well, that seems to make sense to me because I've heard people, experts, not just people on the street, but I've heard experts say that you know, baby boomers, there's some people that have the opinion, some medical people have the opinion that we could live to be in our hundreds. So,
mm-hmm.
So you know, the whole challenge there is how to keep paying out when the amount that you put in isn't enough to cover the lifetime of the average person.
Correct.
So, well, I think
it's definitely one of those. I mean, you know, just statistically, you know, the maximum monthly benefit last year was $2,500. So, you know, just assume that if you get the maximum benefit, you get a check $2,500 for each year, I mean, each month, until, you know, until that's a lot just for that maximum, that person. And then on average, you're probably going to let, you know, the average person about $1,200 a month. You know, that's a lot of people receiving the same amount, like you said, for longer periods of time. And what's happened, you know, I know, like you said, you know, let's not blame us, the baby boomers, for these things. But what happens is that over time, we're able to, what happens with boomers is that we leave the system, but the generation after us is not putting enough into the system
mm-hmm.
again anymore. And it's not going to be enough to replenish the pool to draw from.
Right.
And that's where people are starting to take a look at, you know, some other options to take a look at it. But like I said, probably the simplest way to do it would be to increase the age based on where longevity numbers have been expected to climb. You know, it's a lot of people who are over 100 living these days, and that's statistically, healthcare is getting better, we're living longer. So I think that number will probably have to increase over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that makes sense. I don't know that it will be popular, if any popular.
I know. It's not going to be popular because, you know, that's what I hear a lot from the industry is that I'm not sure where Social Security is going. So, you know, as soon as I'm eligible 62, I'm taking the money and run. That's what I see a lot of people doing as clients going, I really just want to get something out of this because I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
And that's where people tend to start falling is that, you know, I can't wait longer, and if they're going to increase the age, I really just need to get something out of it. So, you know, it's kind of a mad frenzy to get, you know, get some benefit, even if it's a reduction in benefit, at least taking something out of the system that I've paid into.
Okay. Well, let's see. I've got more questions from Kathy, it looks like. So she likes to type them in and not say them out loud. So she says, baby boomers put more into Social Security over our working lives. Did we not? So why are we blamed for taking it out? I guess we just talked about that. But.
Yeah, we did.
And then,
we're just going to be blamed because we're a bigger population. That's probably why.
Right. And another question on women's lifetime income. She says, do you foresee any possibility of future legal redress for the inequality of women's lifetime income?
In my opinion, I probably don't see anything coming legally down the road. I mean, I know we've had some legislation from the president about, you know, the equality and equal pay for women, you know, so I think we may see some things like that. But in terms of, you know, legal precedent with it, I don't foresee anything in that area.
All right. I think that we won't try to get into a crystal ball on that sort of a thing right now. But since Kathy, you are sending in questions, if you're live and you've got any questions, I'm going to give people one more chance to ask questions that we can hear. The lines are still open. Ask any questions. Otherwise, I think we're at the top of the hour, and I'm going to close the call. So one last chance here. Okay. Well, that's been a lot of wonderful information that you provided here,
yeah.
And I really appreciate it. As always, it's great talking to you, and I thank you for being our guest tonight and for the great discussion on women and social security. And I know that we've been trying to do our calls, I believe, the first Thursday of each month.
First Thursday. Mm-hmm.
So that would take us to our next call would be May 2nd. And I'm going to put you on the spot here because you and I haven't talked about this before, but do you have any thoughts on what we'll be talking about in May?
I do not, but I'm sure it will be definitely another juicy topic as always.
Okay. Well, as soon as all of our listeners, I will say, as soon as Pam and I figure out what juicy topic we'll hit on next, we will get information out to everyone, but mark your calendars for our ongoing financial discussions with Pamela J. Sams, and the next call will be the same 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday, May 2nd. And meanwhile, if you have any questions for Pam after this call ends, you can feel free to email them to her. Her email address is pamela@jacksonsams.com. That's jacksonsams.com. And Pamela, of course, I don't think there's any strange ways to spell that, so what would just be Pamela. So anything else that I forgot to talk about here, Pam? Anything that I forgot to say?
No, but I think we have covered it all. But I really want to stress to people, you know, as you start doing retirement planning, really contact the Social Security Administration. You know, they're very, very friendly people, and they're very helpful. And to go online at ssa.gov to get a copy of your statement, to really take a look at it, see what those numbers are. If there's any discrepancies, making sure you contact them to discuss that, and then really just kind of find out what estimates on your benefit, and then, you know, really consult a financial advisor to really look at some of those strategies that make the best sense for you when you're doing your overall retirement planning and Social Security planning.
Excellent. And I had realized my birthday's in March, and I know that not that I get waiting with bated breath for the Social Security to send me my annual report, but I remember thinking before my birthday that, oh, I'm going to be getting my latest update, and it didn't show up this year. So you are so correct that they're saving paper. They're saving money.
Yeah, they're saving paper. Yeah,
right.
But the website is great. It has a lot of tools, has a lot of you know, benefit calculations, and a lot of what we had talked about today as well. So it's a wealth of information, but I would definitely stress getting on and getting a copy, signing up for an account to get access to your statements so you can look at those on an ongoing basis, because they're not coming in the mail anymore, as you said,
mm-hmm.
And you really need to have access to this information as you're doing your overall retirement planning.
Right. Well, again, Pam has email at pamela@jacksonsams.com. Send her any questions if you come up with them after the call. And Pam, I thank you very much for being here tonight and talking on this topic that's so very timely for all of us. And for all of our shy people who sent us questions online but don't want to say them out loud, we thank all of our guests for being here too. And at that, I'm going to say good night.
Okay, good night.